one of the biggest shocks to the political landscape in the history of Northern Ireland. For the first time, there is no unionist majority at Stormont. Sinn Féin has had its best result ever, coming less than 2,000 votes and just one seat behind the DUP. Let's speak to the DUP right at the very beginning of the programme. Gregory Campbell with us this morning. Gregory, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Are you shocked by this?
No, I wouldn't say I'm shocked. There obviously was going to be a few changes. We, in terms of the DUP, we were very pleased that we didn't just increase our vote, but we increased it in every single constituency. But I think what wasn't foreseen to the extent that it happened was the significant increase in the Sinn Féin vote. And that is what brought about the change in the result. And of course, one of the things within unionism that happened was the Mike Nesbitt intervention, which cost a number of seats and benefited the SDLP.
Are you going to allow, on behalf, it was about 225,000 unionists who voted for the DUP, before Sinn Féin forget anything, and I don't need to say this, you can say it, but you are the biggest party. Are you going to allow Sinn Féin to dictate to the unionist people who the unionist First Minister will be?
Well, we've made it fairly clear that we're not going to do that. But you see, I think in the context of the aftermath of the election, people have to decide which... Well, first of all, I think across the political divide, there are the vast majority of people, whatever their views were and whatever way they cast their vote, what they want to see is they want to try and see devolved government up and running again as soon as possible and as soon as practical. Now, is the best way to get that any party, whether it's Sinn Féin or anyone else, putting up barriers which A, they know can't be overcome, and B, which make it more difficult for that desire from across the divide to be realised? I think most people will say, well, that's not the way to try and make progress. You know, we could have, but didn't say something like, well, look, Michelle O'Neill is the person in charge of Sinn Féin NI. And one of her first actions was to go along in her own constituency to pay tribute to four dead terrorists. We could have said, look, that's untenable. There's no way we're going to allow a person like that to be first or deputy first minister or any other ministerial position, and you're going to have to change that Sinn Féin before we'll agree to set up a government. But we didn't say that. There are a range of other things we could have put up as red lines, as sort of...
It'll be pretty difficult for you to say that, Gregory, given the fact that you've been working with Martin McGuinness, a former IRA commander, for many years.
As Féin have been working with us and didn't set down red lines or preconditions, but have now, which we haven't. But, you know, that's a matter for Sinn Féin to resolve. They've set out their stall and they've got their mandate just as we have. Now, we intend to carry out the mandate that the voters gave us.
Do you promise the people of Northern Ireland who voted for you that Arlene Foster will be your appointed candidate for First Minister of this country in any future government?
Well, Stephen, you see, that is an open-ended question.
Because, it's not, actually.
Yeah. You know, well, now, if I say yes, that is the case, and then we get into discussions, and, for example, let's say, which hasn't really been raised in the public domain, let us say that a suggestion comes up that both Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill step aside for a temporary period. Would you then come back to me after I'd made the commitment that you've asked me to make and say, but you said... This is what you said on the Monday after the count.
But hold on a second. So are you...
Well,
let me put the question a different way. Are you therefore saying this morning, as Gavin Robinson did when he said the party, if Arlene wanted to do it, the party would consider it, are you saying that it is a viable option that the DUP will consider Arlene Foster stepping aside?
Stephen, that's not what Gavin said. He said that it was a decision for her to make, which of course it is. And that decision is one that we support. She is our leader. She is our nominee for First Minister. And that remains the position.
But she might step aside.
Well, I haven't heard or seen or know of any evidence that would indicate that that is her position. And no one should infer that any answer in response to a question by a journalist after the count, that that would be an endorsement from that person. No one should do that.
But it's bigger than this, Gregory, isn't it? So let me just put this here.
Hold a second. Arlene Foster has just led the DUP to not just...
to losing 10 seats.
No, well, in a reduced assembly. Hold on. Now, given the sustained attack both on her and our party for the past 3 months, she's led the party not just to an increase in our vote, but an increase in our vote in every single constituency, everywhere. Whether nationalist constituency or unionist constituency, our vote was up everywhere. Now, why on earth would we endorse a position which would ask her to bear some responsibility for leading the party in the most horrendously difficult circumstances to an increased vote?
Well, because, some might say, because Sinn Féin, under her watch, have increased their vote dramatically. They're within one seat now of your party, and some might put that down to Arlene Foster misreading the mood of nationalists, and all that crocodile talk came back to bite her.
Well, Stephen, you see, this is, and I've alluded to this several times since the election on Friday. Nationalism has rallied behind a Sinn Féin message. Now, the fact that it's a bogus message doesn't matter in terms of the outcome. It was a bogus message, but people have rallied to it. You know, they kept saying that this was about equality and respect. And we want equality and respect. To try and demand it on one side of the political equation in Northern Ireland infers that the other side aren't offering it to you, which is total and utter nonsense. We want equality and respect. We want the things that Sinn Féin say they want. But the election's over. The last vote.
The man who said curry my yogurt is talking about equality and respect this morning?
Yes. Because you see, when people abuse their position, which is what Sinn Féin did, then they have to expect to have their position exposed. And that's what I did, and will continue to do. But that's over, Stephen. We're now getting down today to trying to devise a way forward so that the will of the people about getting a government in place again is met.
But the reason that I'm focusing on this question about Arlene Foster this morning, Gregory, is that it's actually bigger than her. I'm asking you this morning that on behalf of the 225,000 people who voted for your party, are you going to stand up to Sinn Féin trying to dictate to the unionist people of Northern Ireland who the unionist First Minister will be? Or is that a sacrifice worth making in order for there to be devolved government in Northern Ireland? It doesn't actually matter. Hold on a second. It doesn't actually matter if it would be Arlene Foster or any other individual. Sinn Féin are trying to dictate to your party who the future First Minister or Joint Minister or whatever conundrum it will be. They're trying to dictate to you. Are you going to accept it?
Stephen, not only are we not going to accept that premise, but it would be equally unacceptable and equally absurd if we were to demand the same of Sinn Féin. We cannot decide, however much some people might wish it to be the case, we can't decide who the Sinn Féin nominee will be for Deputy First Minister. Now, if we wanted to, yes, we could decide that. If we wanted to make things awkward, we could do that. But how much more difficult would that make a resolution? So they can't decide who our nominee will be. We can't decide who their nominee will be. If we do decide to take that position on either side of that equation, we will not make progress.
So,
and that's what everybody has to understand.
So
we
she
won't
is,
make progress.
So it comes back to my second question. She's definitely not stepping aside then, correct?
Was that a statement or a question?
It's a question. Is she definitely not stepping aside?
I don't know of any inference, any response to any question which would suggest that Arlene Foster is going to step aside. No, she's not.
Well, obviously, there is speculation. You know, if you look at today's front page of today's Belfast Telegraph, for example, they're suggesting that there is movement within your own party against Arlene Foster. 10 MLAs.
Well, Stephen, I don't know who was wrong. I don't know what the question was that was put to them, and I don't know what the answer was.
Telegraph saying 10 of her MLAs believe she should go amid growing discontent.
Well, I don't know of any discontent, never mind a growing discontent. As I say, I come back to the point that if you have a leader which brings you through an election where your vote grows in every single constituency, why on earth would there be growing discontent when your vote goes up everywhere? Everywhere, east of the Man, west of the Man, unionist constituencies, nationalist constituencies. Your vote is up everywhere. And the vote of your opponents declines. Remember, that's a thing that hasn't really featured. All the other smaller unionist parties, their votes decline.
Are you calling the other unionist parties your opponents?
Well, they are political opponents.
More so than Sinn Féin?
No, they're not more so than Sinn Féin. Stephen, look, don't play games, Stephen. Don't play games.
I'm suggesting that your opponents at this moment in time are Sinn Féin.
Yes, and you're the same person. When I would have said that on numerous occasions, you would have said, they're your partners in government.
Not anymore, they're not.
Remember, no, that's right. That's why we need to try and get a government which most people across the divide in Northern Ireland want to see.
Okay.
Now, the better way of achieving that is if nobody sets preconditions, which makes it more difficult to achieve.
Okay.
And we're not setting any. We would hope that others won't, but they already have.
Well,
Sinn Féin already have. They've got to think about that and see if they can extricate themselves from that particular position.
In that spirit of you saying that you are not setting any red lines, does your party therefore go into these negotiations removing the red line that Arlene Foster put in place before the election, saying that she would never accept an Irish Language Act? Is that back on the table for a negotiation if you're saying there are no red lines from the DUP?
No, but Stephen, you've just turned things on their head there.
I don't know why you're laughing, because if you're saying to people no red lines, then that's got to include being open-minded about an Irish Language Act.
No, but Stephen, it wasn't us that said here is something that either must happen or must not happen in order for a government to be established. That's a precondition. We haven't said that. But Sinn Féin have. They have said, number one, that they must decide who the Unionist First Minister is, or more directly, who the Unionist First Minister won't be. They've said that. We haven't said who the Nationalist Deputy First Minister must not be. We haven't said that. That's their decision, their call. They make it. We don't make a demand who it won't be. The second thing, the Irish Language Act, they're the people who said there has to be one before we'll go back into a government. We haven't said, unless there's a commitment not to have one, we won't go into government. We know what our position is. It remains unchanged, but it doesn't prevent the establishment of a government.
Well, if it remains unchanged, then you're going into a negotiation with a red line, something you're criticising Sinn Féin for doing.
No, Stephen, no. Look,
sorry, on what planet is saying we will never accept an Irish Language Act? That is a red line over Irish language in this country.
Stephen, what has that got to do with the establishment of an executive and getting the Assembly up and running?
Because it is a red line, and it may be an important issue that Sinn Féin want to sit down and, in the spirit of negotiation, talk about. You're telling them before they go into that negotiation, you will never accept an Irish Language Act. You're still saying that, are you?
Stephen, there will be a range of subject matters that every party will want to raise. And we have a list, and I'm sure Sinn Féin have a list as well. What we're saying is that that needs to be done as quickly as possible.
Is Irish language still a red line for the DUP?
Look, Stephen, we've made it clear we will not endorse or support or approve for an Irish Language Act. That was our position and remains our position. Now, why should either that being the case or not being the case stop a government being established? That's the point, is re-establishing the executive, not what you would like to see after it has been put in place.
In terms of a government being established, has the DUP any learning from the election? Do you think, and this is a genuine question, do you think your party needs to show more respect or use different language towards the nationalist community?
Well, I think there has been a bogus campaign by Sinn Féin which worked. They said to their community, the unionists don't show you and us respect. Now, I think that's wrong, but it worked. It worked. Nationalism came out because it believed the Sinn Féin message, which was there's no integrity, there's no respect, there's no honesty, all of these buzzwords.
Maybe it was the other way around, Gregory, that their core base told them, get out of government with people that denigrate our language. Get out of government with people that mock our language, my yogurt.
Well, then that's an even more...
Get out of government with people that remove funding for LIFA and then put it back again.
That's even more of an indictment then of the political process within nationalism, which allowed that narrative to build. You know, far from the Irish language being disadvantaged, it gets hundreds of millions of pounds of public funding, but the narrative is, from Sinn Féin's point of view, that it isn't treated equitably. It is treated more equitably than my Ulster Scots culture is. Now, if we want integrity and respect, yes, we sign up for that this morning at the outset of the talks. Yes, we want integrity and respect. But you cannot twist and pervert that into something that isn't the case, i.e. that you've been discriminated, that you've been marginalised, that, you know, that in some way you nationalists have got to kick back and vote in such a way that we Sinn Féin can give a bloody nose to unionism. Now, Stephen, the point I wanted to make before I have to go on here is this. Sinn Féin had a successful election just as we had. They had a very successful election. Unionism had a poor election, unionism as a whole. Now, the point I've made several times since the count is this. Sinn Féin, I presume, did not foresee an outcome whereby they may well potentially galvanise the wider unionist community as a result of the very close outcome, which we predicted and others ruled off. Remember, Mike Nesbitt dismissed...
Well, you predicted it 8 months ago as well at the last election, and then it wasn't even close.
No, hold on. At the first leaders' debate, Arlene Foster said this was going to be a very close election, and Mike Nesbitt said, nonsense, that's not going to happen. Well, we saw the outcome. Now, the point is, because of that not predicted outcome, that actual outcome, Sinn Féin may well have galvanised unionism in a way that others... down through the years, didn't. If that is the case, then they will have to live with that outcome in future elections. Now, but none of that is going to help us resolve today's problem. Today's problem is trying to ensure as quickly and as equitably as possible we get the devolved structures back in place.
Do you think it can be done within 3 weeks?
I think it's unlikely. But let's get started. Let's get started and let's see.
So you think we're looking at another election? I guess some people could argue that what the DUP might want here is another election. Run it again.
Oh. Now, it would not be an awful thing. And maybe some people who thought they had unionism behind the eight ball wouldn't want that.
So is that what your party wants? Another election?
I don't think... we said this about this election, that it was unnecessary. So why would we say that another one in 4 weeks' time was essential?
The last election, the point I put to you, and the next one won't be either.
The way you responded there, Gregory, is
you're very much saying that would give you another run at this.
And you know what would happen then? There would be people say, oh, they didn't like the outcome the last time and they're trying to rewrite the election.
So what are you doing? Do you want another election or not?
I don't think another election would be appropriate, just as this one wasn't appropriate. Because in terms of getting government back in place, it doesn't change anything. I don't know. You know, we heard Jerry Adams at the weekend saying the massive change that it ensured that the unionist majority rule had been finished. There hasn't been unionist majority rule for over 40 years in Northern Ireland. But that's what he said at the weekend. Unionist majority rule. There hasn't been unionist majority rule since 1972, 45 years ago.
Are you worried? Straight question. Are you worried where unionism is currently at?
I'm not worried where unionism is at, but I am concerned that divided unionism resulted in Friday and the Friday count. And a united unionism would very well see a number of those seats that the SDLP and Sinn Féin had taken coming back into unionist hands. The unionist community and the unionist parties have a responsibility, in my view, and this is not a proposal or a suggestion, this is just a very natural outcome of the count. We have a responsibility to look at that and see where that takes us all.
Are you worried about losing the power over a petition of concern?
Well, when you say worried about losing the power,
You can't do it on your own anymore.
Well, then, you know, but if you're worried about something, it's about something that might or possibly could happen. It has happened. We don't have 30 seats. So there's no, I mean, to use that phrase in the context of a question, Stephen, isn't accurate. You can't be worried about something that happened 3 days ago.
Well, for example, that might mean gay marriage and abortion reform in Northern Ireland.
And our position remains as it was.
But your position remaining as it was, you're now in a position, as you well know, that you can't block it if you go back into an executive under these current circumstances with a petition of concern. So does that form any of your calculation about whether you should go back into an executive or whether you should seek another election?
Well, Stephen, it won't. We said that the election that was held last Thursday was an unnecessary election. That we didn't need it because it wouldn't resolve things in terms of getting government back up and running. That has proven to be the case. Would another election change things? We don't think it would.
You don't think another election would provide a different result?
Well, it might, but would it resolve anything? Would it resolve anything? Would it make government more difficult or less difficult to be established? That's the question that most people... I mean, look, Stephen, for the last 3 months, there was a climate created about RHI and other issues. And I canvassed thousands of doors. I'm sure others did likewise. Now, some people say what they got, the anger and all the rest of it. I know what I got was, when are you going to get some form of stable government working properly for us, the people? That's what we wanted to see. Whatever their opinion was about various controversial issues, there was a broad consensus right across virtually all of the people that I spoke to who expressed an opinion, get Stormont back working again. We needed to deliver for us, the people. Whatever their views were about controversial issues, they wanted us to deliver. Now, you have to look at the outcome. Did the outcome make that more likely or less likely? Will another election make it more likely or less likely?
Well, what would make it more likely to have government in Northern Ireland is either Sinn Féin backing down on their ultimatum of Arlene Foster or Arlene Foster stepping aside, Gregory. That's where it's at the moment. It doesn't matter what you all discuss if you both stay in your current position over Arlene Foster. It doesn't tally. It can't move forward.
Well, see, what people then
either Sinn Féin backs down or the DUP backs down.
Well, no, what people have to look at is what is it on either side of that equation that you've just outlined, what is it that is being viewed as either the most obstinate or the most realistic? One side saying, this is what must happen, and if it doesn't happen, we won't enter an executive. That's what Sinn Féin have said. We will not enter an executive. People can argue to box themselves into a corner or whatever, but that's what they've said before the election and since. That's what they have said. We haven't said any such similar thing. We have said, let's get into discussions. let's get government up and running. People have to decide which was the more reasonable position to adopt and which is the more reasonable now. Now, but, you know, I don't want to go back to the election campaign. The election's over. The votes have been counted. Now, let's try and ensure we get that devolved government that most people want to see running back up and running and strong to deliver for people.